to the book of Exodus chapter 1. Exodus chapter 1. And in our little pause in these last couple of days or so, looking at the movement of Israel having a wonderful message by Moses, that is the book of Deuteronomy, in order to proceed forward into the land, into the new year, if you want to say it that way, a new life. And we're looking at that. So we're just reminding ourselves of the truths that were most helpful if Israel would do them. But Israel had no heart. That was the problem. So now, just looking at it from a different window, in the light of that, and the light of what we mentioned in the board meeting a little bit, in Exodus chapter 1, Israel, remember, is in bondage to, by way of Jacob, 400 years as slaves. And in the process of all of that exercise in that period of time, you will notice that chapter 1 of Exodus, verse 14, I'll leave verse 13, and the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor, very hard, very difficult. That whole, their whole weekly kind of existence was very, very trying and exhausting, to say the least. So here they are going through that, and in the process, they're in very hard bondage, and they're serving the Egyptians. Now, keeping that background in mind, that's what they did for a long time, long history, generation to generation. Now, over to Exodus chapter 14. And remember that Israel is, what we just read, very hard, it wasn't good conditions, bad conditions. Therefore, now, they're out of Egypt, crossing the Red Sea, etc., going to. And in chapter 14, picking up, if I can, the sense of it in verse 11, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, thou hast taken us away to die in the wilderness. Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt, out of bondage? Is not, verse 12, this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt? Remember, we shared that on Sunday, that they were very specific, that they didn't want to leave. So here's plague after plague, but they didn't want to go. They just didn't want to go. But it was God's time. Let us alone, verse 12, that we may continue to serve with rigor the Egyptians. For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians in hard bondage, better to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Now, they were looking, and they were not contemplating the wonderment of what was happening. They were being set free, but they were clinging to bondage. They were clinging to it. And so, in the light of that, hanging on, and that was locked into their mind and heart, Egypt was. We've lived this way. This is how we eat. This is how we work. This is how we sweat and bleed and die. This is our life. And we don't want to get out of it or change it for something unknown. Now, Numbers chapter 11. And in Numbers chapter 11, Picking up, if I can, 11 and verse 4, a little background. And the mixed multitude, means rebel, rabble, riffraff. All kinds of people that went just to have the benefits that could be there, and they weren't of the same mind and heart at all. And the mixed multitude was among them, fellow lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, "Who shall give us flesh to eat?" Now we want to eat. We remember, verse 5, we remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt, lots of fish, at the end of the Nile there into the Mediterranean, lots of fish which we did eat in Egypt, freely, fresh, lots of fish, cheap, and the cucumbers, the very large cucumbers that grew there, and the melons, watermelons for thirst and stuff, and the leeks, and the onions, and garlic, the common food of the low-class people with not much, and that was their diet. Now, so here they are, and they're looking, and they're relishing their diet back there in Egypt. And they relish that. Their mouth is watering, looking for that. They're looking for the world. They're looking for Egypt, what they had. Now, so when you come now to verse 6, their complaint, they're comparing the diet, the relishing of the diet in Egypt, which they really, it was a slave's diet, but hey, it was a great diet. Compared to what? Verse 6, but now our soul is dried away, and there is nothing at all, nothing. Remember all the variety they had, onions and garlic and all that. But our soul is dried away, there is nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes. There's nothing besides this manna, none at all. The only thing we have is manna, and that's what you gave us, God. Thus, in the light of that manna, that's all we have. And remember, in Exodus chapter 16 and all that, verse 15, the manna, God gave manna to them, which was white like coriander seed. They gave it. God gave this manna in a most wonderful way. Now, having said that God gave the manna in a most wonderful way, but they were totally unhappy with it. Verse 7, and the manna was as coriander seed, that is white in color, and the color thereof as a color of bdellium, which is a oily, white, sparkling, shining substance. We have no record to anywhere to pin it down. But it had to be white, and shiny, it was shiny, sparkling. And so they looked at this and they called it manna. The word manna means, what is it? And there is no. So remember in John 6, as we're studying, you remember the Israelites said to the Lord, our fathers found God gave them manna from heaven, heavenly food. That's right, heavenly food. And there is no manna. The God gave manna in a most wonderful way, and there is nothing on earth that's like it. So there's nothing you can go around and hunt for something on planet earth in all of the different product growth foods. And there's nothing like it. That's because God made it special. It's manna. Therefore, manna means, what is it? What is it? We don't know what it is. We don't know what it is. That's right. They didn't know what it was. So now, hang on to that part. And they're complaining that they have this manna. Now you need a little more help with the manna. And thus over to Deuteronomy will help us. In Deuteronomy and chapter 8, remember, we were there on Sunday. And in chapter 8, picking up, please, in verse 2 and then verse 3. Remember, God is rehearsing for them that by way of Moses, they're 39 years in the wilderness. So now, verse 2, and thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee, to prove thee, put thee to the test. For what reason? To know what was in thine heart, that they would understand where their heart was, whether thou wouldst keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee, and suffered thee to hunger, and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, no one knew what it was, that he might make thee known, that he might make thee know, what do you need to know? That man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. So, God, it's what you say and do. That's how we live. That's right. It isn't by what you eat and drink. No, it isn't that at all. So now, in the light of verse 3, though, chapter 8, verse 3, he humbled thee, and he suffered thee to hunger, and then he fed thee with manna. So now, getting that little bit, God's telling them what they had in their history in the wilderness. They should have learned something. Now, how is it he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger now, and you didn't know. So now over, please, in your Bible to Exodus chapter 16. Exodus chapter 16. And we have a piece of information that is helpful. Exodus 16. Remember now, Deuteronomy is the end. After their wilderness, they're about to cross the Jordan, thereabouts. Now, so here in Exodus chapter 16, he suffered thee to hunger. Now you want to answer the question, when did he suffer them to hunger? When did he do that? And thus, chapter 16, picking up, please, in verse 1, and they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month, after their departure out of the land of Egypt. So we're talking about a whole month going by. And now, so a whole month goes by before something happens. Over in verse 3, I have to have a little better context. Verse 2, and the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Because remember now, they've had a whole month go by in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth unto this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. The hunger. Verse 4. Then said the Lord unto Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove and put them to the test whether they will walk in my law or no. Now, verse 5. It shall come to pass that on the sixth day thou shalt prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily, etc. Verse 6, and Moses and Aaron said unto all the children of Israel, at evening then you shall know that the Lord hath brought you out of the land of Egypt. And they're murmuring. Now what did you do? You didn't have any manna for a month. Not until the beginning of the second month. I let you go with your own resources, with your own ingenuity. Here you are in the wilderness. You got all your little lunches and stuff. And you're going to try to survive in the place where you can't. One person, maybe. Over 2.5 million, never. Plus animals, never. Never. Between water and food, impossible. That's right. It's the place of death. Now, how am I going to know that? Well, God, you made them wait 30 days before you did anything. You just let them go, and they're busy doing what they're doing, and they're getting all used up, and what isn't working, and they're running out of food, and the system, where they're at, they need to trust God, but they don't intend to trust God, but they better learn to trust God, because they'll never make it in this place. So God, are you going to help them? I am. I'm going to give them 30 days to do nothing. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to sit there and let them work it out. And what are they going to do? They're going to discover they can't do it without me. There's no way to survive. And I'm going to give them manna. I'm going to give them manna. So now, I suffered thee to hunger, and then I gave you manna, Deuteronomy 8:3. Now, so in the process of doing all that, and remember manna was a super-duper provision, a wonderful thing from heaven. You could mix it with oil. You could cook, heat it, bake it. You could eat it raw. You could eat your manna all kinds of ways. It doesn't matter how you ate it. It was a food, a super duper food, that was super duper. That's all you needed was manna. Where are the vitamins? In the manna. Where are the minerals? In the manna. Where is anything in the, where are the amino acids? In the manna. What isn't in the manna? Everything is in those little kernels, little beads. One little bead has everything in it. Wow. Wow. So now they have this wonderful, wonderful manna and a wonderful, God's wonderful provision for them. And my question is, in the light of this wonderful provision, of that, and remember now, you have to be aware of the fact that this food was perfect food. We don't know what that is like, but perfect food. And they lived 39 years and 11 months on it. God kept them alive perfectly. No sickness, nothing. For 39 years and 11 months. So he did. God did that wonderfully for him. So now, having done that, and you would think there'd be a thanksgiving and a sense of the reality of God's care of them. But it isn't there. It just isn't there. And remember, in all kinds of ways, without getting into it, you know, they have clothes. If you read the old Jewish writers way back a long time ago, and they'll tell you, and they said, They marvel at what God did. They crossed the Red Sea, and they wore clothes, but they never washed them. They were always clean. Their clothes, there was no clothing, there was no Kmart to go buy clothes. And the clothes always just, little boy and girl grew, the clothes grew. The clothes always fit. The shoes always fit, just kept going. Their whole world was like this. Their whole world was like that. Can you imagine that? That's awesome. But you know what? There's no thanksgiving. You would think they'd be overwhelmed. That's why you want to understand, don't you? That if people would just say, well, if the Lord would just do this and that, then people would believe. You got that part? And even to the point where they said once to him, if someone will come back from the dead, that'll do it. No, it won't. The Lord said that will not do it. And what I did in the wilderness for 40 years didn't do it. Where they had a millennium on top of a millennium, as it were. And they had no thanksgiving to God. Awesome. Hang on to that. Now, having said that, over to Psalm 78. Psalm 78 again. And if I can, in a verse, picking up please in verse 14. History of Israel. Verse 14, in the daytime also he led them with a cloud by day. The Israelites would say the cloud washed their clothes every day. The cloud would come down and take care of it. Wow. Don't know, but we weren't there. But man, In the daytime also he led them with a cloud, and all the night with a light by fire. He clave the rocks in the wilderness and gave them drink out of the great depths, water when there was none. He brought streams also out of the rock and caused waters to run down like rivers. You would have to think of thousands of animals and people. Thousands. Think how much water you'd need. Verse 17, and they sinned yet more against him. The more he did, the more they sinned. And they provoking him caused him to be rebellious, provoking the Most High in the wilderness. And they tempted God, put him to the test in their heart, because they didn't have a heart for God, by asking meat or food for their lust. Yea, they spake against God and said, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? What do you think God was doing? You know, if someone nudges, they say, well, what isn't God doing? What on earth isn't God doing? Between the weather, the clothes, the health, the wealth, the sickness, the everything. We had everything going. Wow. Behold, he smote the rock, verse 20, and the waters gushed out, the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for the people? And of course, verse 21, therefore the Lord heard this and was wroth, so a fire was kindled against Jacob, and anger also came up against Israel. Verse 22, because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation. They just didn't believe. You say, how could you not believe? It's easy. They didn't want to honor. They didn't trust. They didn't say God didn't have power. They didn't say God couldn't do anything. They just didn't want to believe him. They didn't want to have the relationship with a heart. They didn't want to give their heart to him. If there's anyone to give your heart to, he's the one. But they didn't want to do that. Now, having said that little bit, now over to chapter 14 of Numbers. If I may, maybe you do 13 first. Numbers chapter 13. And picking up, if I can, in thought. Now, where are we going? Well, we're going to get somewhere, but let's see what we can do. So here they are. They're unthankful. And they have a wrong attitude. And all of the manna and all of the stuff that God was doing for them, they should have taken it in like you take food in with thanksgiving. But they didn't do that. They just didn't do that. Okay, hang on to that part. Now, Numbers chapter 13, you remember, they go in the land. The 10, 12 spies do, and they saw everything's there, and they were told to go up and take the land. To conquer it, God would give them the victory over the chariots of iron and the great big giants of Anak and everybody else. And thus, chapter 13, verse 30, and Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess, for we are well able to overcome. We're well able to go. Everything, all the odds, all the obstacles, all the opponents, all the opposition is greater than us. It's all more than anything we have. So if you're going to say we can't beat any of it. We can't beat their chariots. We can't beat the giants. We can't beat their walled cities. We can't do it. We are as grasshoppers, just little. That's right. And verse 31 then. But then they went up, then the men that went up with them, the 10 of them, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. And besides that, verse 32, and they brought up an evil, bad, distorted report of the land according to their subjective thinking of land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come up come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. We, the whole thing is going to eat us up. Now, that's the movement. You're going to eat us up. The circumstances, the conditions, everything in our world, how are we going to beat it? How can we overcome physical problems, mental problems, social problems, economic problems? How are we going to fix governments? How are we going to fix cities? How are we going to fix people, terrorists, ISIS, or anything else? How are we going to fix anything? Well, we can't. We sort of just hope it somehow doesn't get close to us. But we can't fix it. We can't fix it. So it's more than. So it's what happens is we have a society, more or less worldwide, that is being consumed, eaten, by the conditions. They're global conditions. The economy is global. The threats and war and terrorism and unstableness and everything that's not good is very worldwide. Very worldwide. And we can't get away from it because we are so electronically set that between the smartphones and the other things and the internet and the radio and the television and all the media, all of it keeps feeding. And whether we like it or not, we're consumed by it. And if we aren't careful, it doesn't mean you understand the news. It just you just would say, I don't know what the news is, but I know it isn't good. People don't understand. They don't know what's going on. They don't want to know, most of them. They don't care. But they know it isn't good. Not good. So now, what's that do? That eats you up. It consumes you. It eats away at you. And you don't even know it because it's part of our life. It's like the frog being cooked. Remember the illustration? You have a big pot of water, and they put the special water, and the frog loves the water, and you turn the heat on, and the frog loves the water, and he just flips around in the water and flips around, and the water gets hotter and hotter, and he flips less and less, and pretty soon you have roast frog. Because he couldn't get out. We couldn't get out. That's what's happening to the society. We're getting cooked and cooked. We don't even know we're being cooked and hooked. Now, in the light of that, what are you going to say then? That's what's happening to Israel. They're getting consumed. They should have been able to look to God and eat the manna with thanksgiving and realize he provided it. What were they to do with the manna? To put it down inside of their stomach so that they could enjoy all the benefits of God who created it. But they didn't do that. They had no thanksgiving. So now, here's Numbers 14. They have no thanksgiving to go into the land, to God, to consume the enemy. Can we consume the chariots of iron? And the giant, no, we can't consume them. They're too much. They're going to eat us up. That's the problem. Everything is eating us up, and we can't overcome it. Therefore, chapter 14, what are you going to say, Joshua Caleb? And picking up, please, remember they all want to go back to Egypt, chapter 14, verse 4. And they said one to another, let us make a captain, and let us return unto Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel, and Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that had searched the land. These are the two that came back with a positive report, and they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through is to search it is an exceeding good land. And if the Lord delight in us, if we're trusting God, then he will bring us into this land and give us to us a land which floweth of milk and honey. After all, we crossed and got into the wilderness, and God kept us in a place of death and gave us a superior life that we couldn't have had on the most plush part of planet Earth. We couldn't have had it like we have in that desert by God. Therefore, we're going to go and take the enemy. But Verse 9. They wouldn't do that. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land. They are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them. Remember, they already had said they expected to lose to the God of Israel who opened the Red Sea. There's no one that can beat that God. And they departed, the defense is departed from them. And the Lord is with us. Fear them not. Now, they're bread. They're bread for us so that we can go and consume. We can consume the manna. We can consume the chariots of iron, the giants of Anak, the walled city. We can have consume anything and everything in the will of God. In the will of God, we can go and get and do whatever. We need to be consumers and not be being consumed. Consumed. And thus, God's miraculous care, extraordinary caring, is not appreciated, not understood, not looked for. No appetite. They have no appetite for God. They got an appetite for Egypt, for the world, for music, for everything under the sun, except for God. No appetite for God. For his care, for his place, for his purpose, there's no appreciation whatsoever for God. And so God's good and gracious will for the nation of Israel is going to pass them by. And their lives are not going to be found to the praise and glory and honor of God. They should have taken, but they didn't. They could have taken, but they didn't. They just didn't do it. They didn't do it, could have done it, didn't do it, should have done it. They didn't do it. They should have been consuming. They were consumed. So, here we are looking, being consumed. And over, and we're just all kinds of places, but here, over to chapter Psalm 14. In Psalm 14, you would recall verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. 14, verse 1. They are corrupt, they have done abominable works, there is none that doeth good. The Lord looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. God was looking at the hearts of people. They are all gone aside, they are all together become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Verse 4. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread and call not upon the Lord? Don't they understand who I am and what I do? No. They just go and eat up Israel and eat up anybody. That's what they do. Does the world care? No, no. Does the world care about your riches and your reward? No. Does it care about your wonderful resources? It doesn't even understand them. Doesn't understand all the benefits. God, as we recall that which you've given us in your word about yourself, you are something else. You are something very, very wonderful. And we ought to be looking to be consumers and not being consumed. You never told us to be consumed like that. You didn't tell us. No. Now, and remember, there's one more we want to remember. Not only the world system is going to consume you. The world system is everything you're going to think. You're going to win, you're going to win, you're going to win, and then you die. So you gain the whole, you become a CEO of somewhere and become something, but then you're all taken away and someone else takes it between politics and everything else. Wow. So now, over if you would, 1 Peter chapter 5, remember. 1 Peter and chapter 5. Now, not only is the world going to consume you, but the God of this world is going to help do so, to get it, make sure it happens. So, in the process now, you would recall, picking up, please, 1 Peter 5, verse 6. 5, 6. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, reason that he may exalt you in due time, knowing why you need to humble yourself. Because if you don't, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. And what was the problem? Israel didn't care enough about what God would do, or who he was. They cared more about Egypt and their stomach and their ways and their dreams and their memories and their relishing of yesterday, not looking forward to tomorrow. And therefore, they had no success. They only had failure. That was all that was going to come. Now, you know, when you have the casting, think of the parable of the sower, and one of the things are the cares of this world. They catch us. We're just talking about them. They're all there. They're all there, the cares of this world. But, God, the devil knows them. The cares of the world system, it's his world system under his domain. And so all of the world system and all of its wants and needs, it's all there. And the devil knows that. Therefore, and uses it. Chapter 5, and not to him directly, he has demons and everything else to go do the job, plus your old nature to help him. Chapter 5, verse 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, and he walketh about. What's he doing? Up and down, seeking whom he may devour. And the word devour, remember, is to swallow down. You would say, people, they gulped their food. They didn't even chew it. It went whoop. That's the word. They took it down, not even taking time to chew it. Wow. That's the devil and the system. So the world I live in, work, home, school, all of that is doing what it does. And if I'm not careful, I'm being consumed. I'm being slave to the system. I'm in bondage to it. I don't realize it. And it calls the shots. How the day's going to go today is up to the system. How work is going to go is up to the system. How class is going to go is up to the system. And we're looking. Instead of coming there and understanding that I don't need to be consumed by it, hour by hour, day by day, I can look to God. How so? John chapter 4. In John chapter 4, you would recall in our study of the Gospel of John, remember the disciples, chapter 4, picking up please, in verse 4, John, chapter, Gospel of John, verse 32. But he said unto them, I have meat, food to eat, that you know not of. And they didn't understand that at all. Verse 33. Therefore said the disciples one to another, hath any man brought him aught to eat? In other words, someone else must have brought him lunch from McDonald's or something. And we don't know about it. Verse 34. Jesus saith unto them, he knew what they said, thought, my meat, my food, is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work. So here they are, worried about this and worried about that, wondering what about the next month, the next day, and ultimately to the cross. Oh, God, we're getting beat up. No one's following us. No one cares, really. And they're all hypocrites for the most part, many of them. And they just aren't with us. They want the wrong things out of you. They aren't interested in being truly, truly saved. And so, therefore, God, we aren't liked, and you aren't liked at all. So we're losers. On the contrary, God said, "You understand? I'm doing the will of God. That's what it's all about. When you do the will of God." My food that I consume is the will of God. Day by day, hour by hour, I drink it in. All the tough, all the good, all the bad, I consume it. I look to you, God, for your good will. That's what I want. I want your will in this. And God, when I have your will in any moment of any day, when I have your will, I have consumed the worst and most terrible circumstances for the glory of God, have I not? Whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, what? To the glory of God. No matter how good the food is, bad the food is. Lots of food, no food. Hard things, easy things. What are you learning? To look to God for His will. In any moment, to be outworked. Persons, places, problems, circumstances. Looking for that to be outworked. Now, having said that little bit, and keeping that in mind, over if you would please, to Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 2. And you would recall chapter 2 and verse 2 tells you a person that's unsaved is in a place where they are under the domain of the you and I live in this world. We're under the blanket of air that's very cold. True? And whether you like it or not, the blanket of air is on top of you. Now you can put on 10 coats and hide under the blanket. But the cold air is there. It dominates. The world system dominates everybody in it. Do you understand? Watch. Ephesians 2, verse 2. Wherein in time past you walked according, lived, behaved yourself according to the course of this world system, according to the prince of the power of the air, that's the devil, the spirit that now is working, present tense, is working in the children of disobedience. He's busy, busy, busy. And so the world system is consuming and being consumed. They're eating each other up. And that's the way it should be, because then you don't enjoy God at all. You're so caught up in everything, just trying to be alive, whatever world, part of the world you live in, that you don't enjoy God at all. You don't have any privileges of being saved, knowing His grace and His mercy. Over to Philippians. Philippians, and now, remember the very same verb. Philippians in chapter 2. Philippians in chapter 2, you recall verse 12, Philippians 2, 12. Here's the believing heart. Wherefore, my beloved, as you've always obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. That means, back to consuming. You're going to consume. It's your day. You're where you are tomorrow at 10 o'clock is where each of you will be, and that's what has to be worked out. Where you are at 10 o'clock tomorrow. That's your lot, and it's just yours, no one else's. And you are able to go and trust God in the middle of all that for His good will. Now, how can that be true? Because that's what you're going to work out. I'm saved. I want to enjoy being saved. I want to have all the benefits of being saved. I want to enjoy the purpose of being saved. I want to be a testimony to the living and only God. Thus, chapter 2, verse 13. The reason you can do all this, remember, verse 13, verse first word, for it is God. Can't do without Him. Which worketh, that's the same as in Ephesians 2. The devil's working, but God's working. And when you get saved, you transferred owners. You transferred the domain. And you were under the God of this world. And God, you got saved and were made a new creature in Christ. And you're made and enjoy an exercise being a new creature. And God, work it out. You don't have to sit there and be consumed by anything anymore. Verse 13, for it is God which worketh, there's your verb, in you, both to will, to will and to do of his good pleasure. God said, that's it. You want to be a consumer? I do. Then I'm going to look to God inch by inch, and I'm going to look to God. I'm going to learn to do it, no matter where, at work, home, school, play, whatever I'm doing. And I'm going to do it, learn to look to God, trust God. So in the circumstances, I'm going to be God conscious. I'm going to be governed without even thinking about it by God's presence. And it's going to handle me, going to help me. And so I'm going to go and I'm going to consume. Instead of being consumed by everything that should worry and cause want and everything, anxiety, fears, and faults, I don't have to do that. I can look to God, and not to me, not to my subjective thinking about things, what I feel about them. It's immaterial. I'm looking for God out here. I'm not looking for myself to do that. God, I want your will. And God, here you are to make it happen. You got all the pieces. I don't have them. And so God does what he does. And God worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Now, having said that little bit, therefore, you need to go and have a wonderful, wonderful courage. If we would, we'll look at that. To consume. And lots of people, you want to be passive. But you know the word believe is active. It isn't a passive verb. It's an active verb. Believe. You can't be passive. Neutral. There is no neutral. We just did that on Sunday. You're either for me or against me. That's all. There's no neutral ground. So, God, what do I want to do? Well, I don't want to be passive and just sort of slide along, whatever. And wherever the tide goes or the river goes or the people go, that's what I do. Whatever the mood, that's what I do. I don't want to do that. I don't want to get consumed. I'm being consumed by it then. God, I have the right and privilege to look to you. Therefore, do I know what? Do I know that all things work together for good? What do you think? I don't know. That's what he said. Didn't he? Some of you thought that was taken out of the Bible, did you? Or what? No, God said, all things work together for good. To them that love me and choose my purpose and my will. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. And being wise enough to want my will. And I do have a will. At 10 o'clock tonight, I have a wonderful, wonderful thinking about you right now. And I know everything about you. Then are you going to trust him at 10 o'clock for whatever's going on? That's what I need to learn. And I need to learn that. And God, you're going to have to help me do it so that I'm not going to be consumed and I'm going to go and look to you. All things work together for good. That's what I know. And I know in closing, you can go over there a place. I hope you got a little bit anyway. Over to James. Going to have courage. You are either going to be an eater or you're going to be eaten. Take your pick. Either you're going to eat, let's see what we can do. Either you're going to eat the bear. A bear isn't the best, I guess, of tasting. But when you're hungry, eat the bear. Either you're going to eat the bear or the bear is going to eat you. Now, take your pick. Which is it? Lay down and, Mr. Grizzly, here I am. No. Or you're going to try to punch Grizzly in the nose and run. See? Which is it? It's up to you. Your pick. Isn't it? Whatever it is. Tomorrow, any moment, I could just step in right where you were and say, what are you going to do? Be eaten by this? Or eat it? Are you going to consume this or be consumed by what you just heard, what you just think, what you just feel? Are you going to let that consume you or are you going to be a consumer? Wow. Now, so James 1, closing. Brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, trials and tests and trouble. Knowing this, the trying of your faith worketh patience, bearing up under the load, not running away. Nope, nope. Now, don't worry about the giants and the walled cities and the chariots of iron, but let patience, bearing up under the load, have her perfect work complete, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. So, God, how are we going to get there? Well, we're going to go and look to you, and that's what we're going to do. And the solving and resolving of all of the circumstances on a daily basis, God, you're going to have to put them together. And we're going to learn to trust you, and we're going to consume it. So it's a wonderful thing. Here you are looking for whatever lies ahead, and you can either say, God, I don't know what's there, but you do, and I want your goodwill in it. I know I want it. I'm going to look for it, and I'm not going to wait until June. I'm going to start tonight. Your goodwill. Whatever I have in my little heart and mind and head, I'm going to look to you for your outworking. I want to do my part. I have a lot to learn, many things to change and fix in my life. But God, you're going to help me get through this. And by the trial and test and trouble, all of it, you're going to let me go through it so that I will learn. But in the process of bringing the bear and the lion and the trouble and the test to me, I'm going to learn my weaknesses, my failure, my faults. But in the process of seeing my weakness, I'm going to see your strength. And I'm going to each time trust you more and me less and less. So pretty soon I don't even think about myself. I just remind myself and thank God for your presence. What do you think? So we'll have a prayer. You might have a particular request as we go forward to be consumers and not consumed by things. And remember the Bible line, remember the prison ministry, remember all of the nation of Israel. Remember our government, remember the